I remember talking about it with Steve Cervillo, the FDH New York Bureau off-air, that there was some talk in the immediate aftermath of 9/11. There was an awful lot of patriotic talk about, oh, perhaps, you know, a New York Super Bowl or a Washington area Super Bowl or something along those lines. But in terms of making it happen, that was kind of just like a fleeting notion, it seemed like. And it seemed like when the New York Stadium was built without a dome, that possibility may have gone by the wayside. But that clearly was not the case, because somehow or another, it got revived. And I guess we can learn a little bit about the chronology of that, of how this got thrust back onto the national stage here very quickly and ratified yesterday by the NFL with the New York Super Bowl. And, of course, who better to talk about this with than the watchdog, Neil Best from Newsday. We've had him on the show previously, greatly enjoyed it. This guy, again, he's always at the center of the most interesting stories in the sports media world, and it's a pleasure to have him on here tonight, Neil Best. Neil, welcome back to the FDH Lounge. Sir, how are you tonight?
Hear me okay?
Yes. How you doing, Neil?
I'm good. I was just up at the stadium in question this morning. They had a press conference with we had two governors, three owners, two NFL coaches, and then the Bon Jovi concert setting up outside. So the hype and attention that this Super Bowl bid has gotten is really quite unbelievable.
Well, I'll tell you what, but before I ask you what was going to be my first question, there's an interesting thing, a follow-up that I want to ask you based on your having been there today, and I imagine that probably wasn't the first time you were there. New stadium versus old stadium. Obviously, again, we know that, you know, the Fat Cats are going to have, you know, much better amenities, blah, blah,
right,
blah. But basically, you know, whether it be to the average fan or anybody else, talk about some of the differences, new Meadowlands versus old.
Well, I mean, first of all, I am partial to the old place because that was basically my office for 10 years and because there was absolutely nothing wrong with that as a place to watch a football game. However, as you kind of alluded to, like with most of these new stadiums in every sport, the big difference is not the seating area, it's the stuff behind it. It's the concourses and the restaurants and the clubs and the... I mean, there's no question that there's more creature comforts at this place, and there's nothing wrong with the place, even though it's very gray, because they had to make it gray because they couldn't make it green or blue. But it's a football stadium. It's not as quirky as some of the new baseball stadiums, because there's only so much you can do with a football stadium. And I mean, it's fine. I don't know if I would have paid $1.7 billion for it, but there's certainly nothing wrong with it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's. I mean, that basically sounds like what I've heard about a lot of the newer football stadiums in recent years, and certainly they are harder to distinguish themselves by than certainly the new baseball parks
right,
going up. As far as the chronology of how this got out there, again, you being in New York, I'm sure you've been hearing about this longer than probably most of the rest of us in flyover country. This seemed, I think, to catch a lot of the country more or less by surprise. In recent weeks, you've been hearing the commissioners behind this and everything. But again,
right,
outside of the whole post 9/11 hoopla, when you started hearing that this could happen as a patriotic response to 9/11, for many, 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 many years, I heard nothing about this. How and when did this pop back up onto the forefront?
Yeah, I mean, the 9/11 thing is kind of weird because, you know, Paul Tagliabue had that idea, you know, back in 2002 or 3, and originally they were going to try to put the 2008 Super Bowl here, and that made more sense as a post 9/11 thing. Now, of course, we're talking about 13 years later, so then they gave New York a Super Bowl when there was, if they built the west side of Manhattan Stadium, I think that was going to be the 2011 Super Bowl at one point, but that never happened. You know, I think that it's a combination of the fact that the commissioner kind of got behind it in a big way, and he has a tremendous amount of influence. And also, you know, it's part of this trend of rewarding cities that build new stadiums, and that's part of it. And they're helping this stadium doesn't have naming rights sponsor, which is definitely a part of this drama, too, which they're hoping that'll kind of finally get a company to put its name on this place. You know, but, I mean, obviously the weather is the question. And that's an interesting sports debate more than it is a business debate. But I guess to answer your original question, I mean, it's one of those things where momentum just kind of built. And I think in terms of that part of it, it's really the commissioner getting behind it in a huge way that really kick-started this momentum, which, as you said, you know, up until 2-3 months ago, I don't think New York was a slam dunk. That's only happened in the last few weeks.
Well, you know, and you mentioned about the sponsors for the stadium, and I know that, you know, the first thing I think that comes to mind for most people when you mention that is the complete and utter fiasco in an area with a very, very large Semitic population. When you're looking at a company that had had ties to Nazis during the Holocaust here, or at least that's the image, regardless of, and I don't know exactly where the facts lie on the situation here and the company's culpability, but I think when you mention sponsors for the new stadium, the first thing that comes to most people's minds is, wow, what were they thinking with what almost happened previously?
Yeah, I mean, look, I wasn't as offended by that as a lot of people, just because I tend to be pretty liberal when it comes to political correctness stuff. However, you're right. I mean, the fact that they didn't see the magnitude of the reaction was kind of surprising. But the real problem, though, was the timing. You know, that whole incident, that was in September of 08. That happened right when the economy was about to tank and right when the whole naming sponsor market was about to fall apart. And we had a big controversy in New York here about Citi sponsoring the new Mets stadium when they were getting government assistance. So the problem was not so – part of it was losing that deal, but the other part of it was once they lost that deal, there was nothing else. There was no plan B because the market had dried up. So – I think that obviously exacerbated that problem. I mean, in normal times, okay, they had a deal, public relations hit, okay, the deal falls apart, let's move on to, you know, plan B. But there was no plan B, and here we are almost 2 years later, and there's still no name on the place. And, you know, there's a limited number of companies that can afford this, and B, want to take the public relations hit. Although, again, compared to a year ago, the environment for this kind of thing is much better than it was.
Oh, exactly. And I mentioned, by the way, and as far as how it relates to the Super Bowl here, I'll tie to this in a second. But before you came on, I was talking about that we have a link on our rundown here tonight to your column at Newsday, albeit now there's the subscriber firewall, which, as I said previously,
don't
I understand.
Remind me.
Completely the business reasons for that. I selfishly miss being able to see all the columns, but I'll never bash them. I understand the business reasons for that. We also link to your Twitter page because it's nice to be able to see your stuff there as well. And one of the things I wanted to point out, I wanted to put you over for this. When everybody was talking about New York and the weather, here was your tweet from yesterday. Tampa and Miami offered no plan for dealing with humidity in 2014. That's a deal breaker for me. Well played, Neil.
Right. My favorite obnoxious tweet from yesterday was when I said the NHL owners should trump the NFL's news by announcing the 2014 Winter Classic will be played in Tampa. So, I mean, the weather. You know what? I was talking about this to a couple of the writers this morning. I mean, as a sports fan, I totally get this debate about the weather and whether you want to mess with the competitive purity of the game. But as a journalist, I think this is cool simply because it is something different. And I don't know, maybe I'm jaded because I've been to 11 Super Bowls, but there is a certain sameness to these things, and there's a sameness to the weeks leading up to the games. And to me, part of the reason, part of why I'm in favor of this whole thing is just simply for the differentness of it and for the interestingness of it. And that's why, I mean, within reason, I'm fine with there being some weather complications.
Well, and I'll tell you what, too. There was I don't remember who it was, but there was a radio host that I heard talking about this. And you talk about having a tin ear. They were talking about, you know, what it's going to be like for the people there in the state. I think it was Colin Cowherd, as I recall.
Yeah, and I think I heard him talking about it. Yeah,
people in the stadium. I'm thinking, boo hoo. You know, maybe I'm the jaded pitchfork populist, but you know what? I laughed in Miami when it rained there. You know, good for all the people with the Gucci bags and the CNBC crowd and everything like that. You know something? I'm from Cleveland. I watched games in the old dog pound where we were there for football and getting loaded and everything like that. You know what I mean? The notion that the people sitting there paying a couple grand for their seat are going to get snowed on, just it fails to move me, Neil. I don't know. Maybe I got a black heart or something.
Yeah, no, I'm not worried. I agree. I'm not worried about that part of it. I mean, again, in terms of the competitive thing, I mean, honestly, the real concern is more, it's always more wind than cold, really, because that Giants-Green Bay game in the championship game a couple years ago when it was 0 degrees, and I was not there, but granted, it was unbelievably cold, but everyone who was there tells me one of the keys to the fact they actually were able to play a quality game in those conditions was that there was no wind. By contrast, when the Giants won the NFC Championship at Giants Stadium in 87 over the Redskins 17-0, it was a horrible game because it was just 40-mile-an-hour winds the whole time. So that really is going to matter more than precipitation. But you know what? Again, I think it's a worthwhile experiment. And, you know, one interesting little factor I actually asked John Mara about today, which he acknowledged was part of the dynamic, is so many of these owners, when you think about it, are scattered around the country, actually are from New York. And he said, yeah, several of these guys kind of told me, oh, I just think it's a great idea, and I'm a New Yorker, and I'm behind this. And that was kind of a... This New York influence does spread its tentacles into all kinds of all over the place. I mean, you got New York owners in Atlanta, Oakland, Minneapolis, you know, other places. So that was another little aspect of this.
Yeah, I think that is an interesting sidebar part of this as well. When you're looking at the geography, I want to ask you about another tweet of yours here, and we've got coming up after this Eric Fisher from Sports Business Journal, and based on what you've heard on this, I may have a question for him in this regard. You're talking about in one of your tweets a corporate sponsor for Cowboys Stadium, and so they've got, of course, the next Super Bowl coming up here. I hadn't heard that the great egotist himself, Jerry Jones, was looking to sell off the naming rights in that way. What have you heard on this, or was that kind of a little sarcastic jibe?
No, he definitely is. I mean, unlike, for example, Yankee Stadium, where they're definitely not going to sell the name to that stadium, Jerry Jones is definitely in that market. Now, from what I've heard, he's been, picky about it, which he has a right to be, but, looking for the right deal and the right money, but he's definitely open to it. The interesting point about, you know, on the one hand, you could say, oh, what's the big deal about getting the Super Bowl in terms of the naming rights in New York, because the Cowboys have the Super Bowl 8 months from now, and they don't have naming rights yet. One of the points that several economists have made, and in fact, Mark Lamping, the CEO of the stadium, made to me this morning, is that at least that they are getting branding value out of having the name Cowboys Stadium there, so that they get something out of that by just having the name of the team there, whereas the Jets and Giants get absolutely nothing from a ridiculous name like New Meadowlands Stadium. So that brings them no value whatsoever, and they basically want to get that name off there as soon as they can. So that is one little distinction there, but my understanding is Jerry definitely is open to selling the name of that stadium at some point.
Yeah, well, that's very interesting, and again, he can afford to be picky because I would think that especially again, as you said, with the Super Bowl encroaching in 8 months here, the list of suitors is sure to grow here at this point.
And in New York, we've got two examples of places that basically they are not going to sell the naming rights because the brand of the stadium name is more important and more valuable. Madison Square Garden and Yankee Stadium are the two examples where it's just never going to have a naming rights sponsor, whereas every other place is fair game.
Yeah. No, that's a good point because those places have their own equity, that could only be diminished in terms of the name value of it by having a sponsor attached to it. Want to ask you also about, because I got a note here from our New York producer, Steve Servillo, about the ESPN upfront, which I know that he attended, and of course you did as well here. What were your thoughts about the next year of programming from the worldwide leader based on what you saw last week in New York?
You know, I go because it's good to see all the ESPN people and some of the other sports media writers, but I agreed with, I think it was the guy in one of the trade publications, I'm forgetting who it was, forgive me, but I kind of agreed with him that it was kind of an odd presentation because they focused on some of the more, the less prominent things they have. They kind of brushed over, for example, the fact that the BCS championship game is going to be on ESPN for the first, on cable for the first time ever. And they talked about a lot of kind of their social networking stuff and just, I don't know, to me, sort of secondary stuff. But, the bottom line is it's just more of the same. They're ESPN and they got a lot of stuff. And their biggest initiative right now by far, understandably, is the World Cup. I did find it interesting how many references there were at the press conference this morning at the Meadowlands about, how the Super Bowl is the biggest event in the world, and I'm thinking the rest of the world would kind of laugh at that idea with the World Cup starting in 3 weeks. But, it was fun. Michelle Beadle did a good job with their, she and Colin kind of were the hosts. And, I wonder a little bit about the value of these upfronts anymore because it's not like they're telling the advertisers anything they don't know. It's really just a matter of putting on a show and entertaining the advertisers more than it is informing them, but I guess that's okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point, because a lot of the stuff has already kind of been out there. And, you know, you mentioned the BCS, but noteworthy also the British Open. All four rounds of that are going to be on ESPN this year. I mean, that is a very fascinating business decision. I mean, that they are ABC Sports was done away with a couple of years back here. It's all, you know, ESPN on ABC. But, I mean, that they're so willing to flush away the last remnants of Disney Network sports programming in a big way on this gamble of putting it all on ESPN and trying to increase ESPN to 100% of American homes or whatever their goal is with it. It's a fascinating business decision that ABC doesn't seem to factor into their biggest things anymore.
Well, I mean, they aren't. I mean, look, they aren't 100% of homes that have cable, basically. So,
right.
I mean, the bottom line is that they not only them, but even like TNT. I mean, the bottom line is they have written off all these sports properties have mostly written off the last 15 million homes that don't have cable as people who might not be of great interest to advertisers, and B, are more likely not to be sports fans. But you know, there's no doubt that even on something like ESPN that's in about 100 million homes, when you put it from ESPN from ABC to ESPN, you do lose some people. But I think all these, you know, everybody's just kind of decided that it doesn't matter anymore, really, and this ESPN, TNT, all these fully distributed cable networks, you know, it might as well be broadcast TV.
Well, you know, on a purely anecdotal basis, Neil, the first person that comes to my mind that chooses not to have cable is my 94-year-old grandmother. So I suppose that would say that's a perfect example of that kind of trade-off in their minds right there.
Oh, exactly. And my 70-something-year-old mother-in-law, I forget, she resisted getting cable for years because she only wanted a couple of channels. And the reality is the sports programming is by far the most expensive stuff. And yeah, a senior citizen living alone who is not a sports fan is the type of person who would choose not to have cable, understandably. But, of course, the ESPN has no need to care about that person. So it's... Yeah, that's just the look. I mean, it's just the reality of the way things work now that you can't be an avid sports fan and not have cable. Therefore, they assume that every avid sports fan has cable.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that is something that makes a great amount of sense when you look at it that way. 100% of the people who are likely to be in, you know, that demographic wheelhouse. I think that's probably a safe bet, I guess, looking at it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. And in the market I cover, it's even more extreme. I mean, in the New York area, it's a 96% penetration of cable or satellite or phone company TV. So the percentage of people we're talking about even, you know, shrinks in this part of the country anyway. I think it's a little higher in some, you know, some rural areas. But not only that, but even the digital penetration in cablevision country, and 90% of their homes have digital cable, let alone cable. So we're talking about, you know, even if you're on, MLB Network, let's say, and you're on Digital Basic, the vast majority of people have that.
Exactly. And that's something where, the ESPN penetration, obviously, you know, quite broad indeed, and that's an understatement, I think, on my part. You mentioned Cablevision. Let's bring it full circle here for tonight, Neil. Sitting here in the flagship city of the Sports Talk Network, Cleveland, Ohio, something that binds my area and your area, the Dolan family, the very execrable Larry and Paul Dolan ownership of the Cleveland Indians, and the Dolans who own the New York Knicks, who coincidentally are going to be chasing LeBron James on July 1st, as everybody and their grandmother knows, that being the biggest story. Talk about, you know, how you see it unfolding here right now, and about how David Stern, in my mind anyways, is doing the whole wink and a nod thing when the president or the mayor of New York or whoever tampers with LeBron James, but God forbid Mark Cuban opens his trap and it's a six-figure fine.
Well, I mean, David Stern can't stop the mayor or the president, but I just think it's interesting as a sports media person to watch the coverage of this LeBron thing, because I have never seen this level of just speculative, random reports that just change every night, to the point where I was comparing it with someone to the first couple of years of Survivor, where there was so many reports you know, everybody was wondering what was going to happen, but the strategy that the show had was to throw out every possible rumor on the internet, so by the end nobody believed anything.
Uh-huh.
That's why I'm at that point with LeBron, because how can you believe anything anymore? Because there's so much just out there. I mean, I certainly find the Chicago theory compelling just because of the supporting cast, but who the heck knows? I mean, on the one hand, I'd love to see him come to New York because it would be fascinating. On the other hand, I don't want to see him come to New York because it would be a pain in the neck and a lot of work for us, and let him just stay in Cleveland. But other than that, I don't care where he goes.
Yeah, it's an amazing, amazing story, and you know, we're continuing to follow it as it unfolds. And as I've said previously, you know, you are the right guy to follow for all of the hot button media stories, whether it be New York area, whether it be nationally, right there at Newsday, and then of course at twitter.com/sportswatch. Neil, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show, sir. It would be a pleasure to have you back on here at some point.
I'd be happy to do it any time, and good luck with Eric Fisher. He's state of the art in the sports media journalism world.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's a fun night. We had on Lloyd Carroll and Simon Applebaum before you. Now you, now Eric Fisher. Boom, boom, boom. It's a heck of a night for us. But Neil, I was really looking forward to having you on, and it lived up to it. Thank you so much. Love to do it again here sometime soon.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Neil. Neil Best of Newsday, everybody. Great to have him on.